Welcome back to the Hollywood Casino Press Box featuring Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoin on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
We're on in 10 seconds, so get ready to have a good time.
Got a very close friend of mine here tonight. He's the number one DJ in St. Louis. Ladies and gentlemen, J.C. Corcoran. Come down here, J.C.
I'm here with Pat Sajak. What you want?
Yeah, Pat, when are you going to take Van in the back seat of one of those cars?
There seems to be a theme developing here.
Do you realize that you have inadvertently given me the nickname Bobo?
Other than J.C., the kindest thing I've ever heard anyone call you.
J.C. recently threw out the first pick.
25 years in St. Louis.
25 years.
Keep on doing those opening day shows.
P.S. The Mets are pond scum.
How about that sign up there? JC says the Mets are pond scum.
And some 50,000 reacting.
But why right, pond scum?
Thank God you came along when you did, because it took Casey to a different level.
Hi, Paul. We've heard stories about how the Beatles really looked up to Elvis Presley.
Yeah, I was in love with Elvis.
JC Corcoran, high above the Riverport Amphitheater on opening night.
JC Corcoran is no longer employed at KMOX.
We are currently sitting in the basement of Mike Bush.
The words we've been longing for. Here we are with Madonna. You must have people lining up 24 hours a day to kind of kiss your ass.
No.
And here we are with Oprah.
Oh, for sure, JC.
Another pitch from Corcoran to Hundley. Swing and a miss. He struck him out.
Good morning, St. Louis. Good afternoon, Moscow time.
Get off, Brian. Just get off.
Brian, I need the phone.
Get off.
Brian,
get off.
Come on, I got to
get off, Dan.
Bob Costas. JC has a fine program, and he really has become a very good radio man.
Now, therefore, I, Francis G. Slay, do hereby proclaim May 15th as J.C. Corcoran Day in the city of St. Louis.
May I now present a culture, sophisticated man about town.
Just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in.
Get off it.
Wow. That is a lot of star power in 90 seconds. Oh, my goodness. Started with George Clooney, had Costas.
And we said a man who needs no introduction. Brought his own.
Brought my own introduction. Thank you very much.
Only, I did grow up listening to you. That's a fact.
Nobody listens to me and actually grows up.
Well, that's true.
Well put. How many total years radio in St. Louis?
Well, if it was 35 this past spring, however you count all the times I was off the air in contract disputes, and as they say, between jobs, I think I've been on about 8 months.
Right.
So. Who's been longer in the history of St. Louis?
I think Guy Phillips, probably Guy. I think he started in 80 with Mike Wall, Phillips and Wall,
98.
Back in the day. And then other than that, no, I don't think there's anybody around longer than that.
And when you came to St. Louis, did you think, all right, I'm going to be here for a little bit. I'm going to go to Chicago. I'm going to go to New York.
Yep.
Like you thought, I'm just going to be passing through.
Believe this, I turned down two jobs in Chicago, one in Los Angeles, one in San Francisco, a couple in New York. I turned them down to stay here. I just liked what I was doing. I you know, you can make a lot more money living in a place like this if you are one of the elite being paid. I don't call myself elite. I'm just talking about the size of the paycheck.
Yeah, well, you were paid by elite.
Yeah.
And he made silly, ridiculous money for years and years.
Yeah.
Can you tell us, like, what you'd do if you had a good ratings book?
Oh.
Ratings were books where this is going to...
When you get paid off the books?
I don't have
like
any...
Bonuses,
yeah,
no?
I don't have any problem talking about it. And my base salary in 1989 was $415,000. That was guaranteed. And then I made, it was either 20 or 25,000 per ratings book, and we had four ratings books a year. So there was 1 year I made $500,000. So, you know, and that's when, those days are over, by the way, folks. They don't pay anybody anything anymore.
You're insinuating that Randy Markle's not compensating us like that?
Yeah.
Well,
you guys aren't exactly in need of a tag day from what I hear.
Oh, come on.
What worked? I mean, if you had to look back and
say, luck.
And I mean, some of it,
no,
was,
it was your
luck.
Work ethic.
It was luck. Look, I had been doing what I do and what I started doing here in 1984 for 10 years before I got here. And I couldn't get anything going. So you got to be in the right place at the right time with what they happened to be looking for at that time. And it was a harmonic convergence in 1984, and I was in the right place at the right time.
And Casey was a great brand, but they had, to my knowledge, and I was younger then, had they ever done, they were like a great rock station, but had they ever done personality-driven mornings?
No. And what happened was, and people forget this, that Casey had fallen way along the wayside. They had just been sold to a new company, and they were, I believe, the morning show when I got there was in ninth place. And Mark Close was on the air doing mornings at KWK. And they put me in a hotel up by the airport for 3 days, and they said, we just want you to listen to the market. Just listen. And then we're going to pick you up in 3 days, and we're going to have a conversation. And they said to me after the 3 days, well, how do you think that you would do against Mark Close? And this has got nothing to do with Mark. I love Mark to death. Well, that was overdoing it. He's all right. But anyhow, I said, well, one of two things. Either there's something indigenous to this community that is going to make me fall flat on my face, or we'll take this town over in about a year. And I was wrong. We took it over in 8 months.
And let's face it, though. Now, you have ability. There's no doubt about it. But it
if
comes...
I would just apply myself, yes. Started hearing this in fourth grade from the nuns at St. Camilla's grade school.
But it comes down to outworking people, like Gary Player hitting till his hands bleed, mm-hmm. or Blake Ahern shooting 1,000 shots. Give our listening audience an idea of what you recorded every freaking night, how many VCRs you had going, how many cuts you would come in at 6 o'clock in the morning with.
I had 9 VCRs at the peak of the VCR movement, if you will, and they were always running. I also had an illegal satellite dish. Do you know, there was one instance, you had a reporter by the name of Sarah Marlowe?
Yeah, Sarah Marlowe.
Okay, so Sarah, I'm fooling around with my satellite dish once, and I'm listening to Sarah Marlowe berate Eric Mink, who had come into the studio to use your flash cam, and I'm sitting in my house in West County watching all of this. It's going on live in the Channel 5 newsroom. I was getting everything. I had all the scramblers and decoders. You wouldn't believe the stuff that I picked up.
Wow, yeah.
And what would you do? Because in the morning, like if I said the Cubs, or I said the Flubs, or if I misspoke, or if Rob Desir called me 50 grand pots and pans, I knew it would be clipped and played. When would you turn that sound? I mean, at 4 a.m.?
I mean, yeah. I get up at about, usually about 4 o'clock every morning, and I would come in with an entire, you know, computer full of stuff, or a reel, as the case would be back then. I mean, you're going back to the cassette days, and I would sit there. I worked harder than anybody else that I was up against. And the thing about it is, they all knew it. They all knew it. And it doesn't take any talent to outwork everybody. And I don't have the kind of talent that a lot of people do who I was up against. But what I could do is outwork them, and so that's what I did.
And production, was that in play? I mean, you did a lot. That's what we're talking about. Lot of sound,
sure.
A lot of audio, a funny clip here or there, or Letterman made a joke, and you played it.
We were on top of everything. Well, I mean, that's...
I think it was a Cardinal base hit. It was a Letterman fun line. It was a Channel 2 screw-up on the newscast. I didn't mean to say Channel 2.
It was probably Channel 4.
Well, now, it's great. It's sort of like the Sniglet books that Rich Hall used to do, or the Redneck... you might be a Redneck if. In both cases, those guys wrote one book, and then after that, there were like 15 more editions. They didn't have to do anything because people sent them all in. And so now... these flubs that show up on TV, half the time, I was not the one that recorded them. People record them and they send them to me, and I just repost them then.
I could see that, where any mistake now, it's going to be fired off to the guy who's going to play them. TMZ doesn't know that Wade Boggs is drunk on a street corner. Somebody got it and sent it, and then they buy it and they sell it to him.
So that's the deal. That's how it works.
I always thought at heart, you probably would have loved to be a sports guy, too, like hosting a sport, because you like to opine on sports.
I thought
topics.
I was going to do it here, for God's sakes. You know, I mean, there's a small number of people, a very, very small little core of people at this radio station who do not want me here. I know who they are, and that's fine, because I can't stand them either. And they got the ear of your boss, Randy Markell, very early on and convinced him that I was not a sports guy. And that's BS. It's always been BS. And it's because these people don't want me in here. So, fine. I know what's going on, and they'll be rewarded at some point in their lives.
How many times, and this flows well with that answer, how many times in your career where you had these celebrated battles with management or a program director?
Wait a minute. He got into it with people?
When you look back, do you say to yourself, maybe I should have done differently? Or do you think, you know what?
Sure.
That was all justified. I wouldn't change a thing.
I'd say I was right and wouldn't change anything about 80% of the
time. How about the biggest regret? Which one you, boy, I wish I would have handled that one.
I went after a guy's wife once. I didn't like him, and I knew that his wife was cheating on him, and I knew that everybody knew that his wife was cheating on him, and I talked about that on the air, and it took a couple of years. I apologized to both of them, and I'm cool with both of them now.
Wow.
I was trying to think of the worst thing I've done. Like, I haven't done that. You got me. J.C. Corcoran, the one only, in studio with us. And I'm going to try and do the J.C. timeline. And let me see. So, Keishi.
Oh, God, I'll never even be able to do this. I wouldn't be able to keep up with you.
From Keishi, did you go to 101?
No, I went to KSD.
Which was 93.7?
Right, 93.7, the classic rock station. I was there. Then I went to Camel X.
How long was that? For my
cup of coffee. It was 53 days. But who's counting?
Did Hyland want you?
I knew I was done. Oh, Hyland was already dead.
Okay, did they want you because
he brought in great
numbers, or did they want you because they didn't want to compete against you?
They wanted me because they wanted to kill my career. That's what they did with everybody. They tried to hire John Hewlett numerous times. I knew exactly what Hyland's MO was. He would bring somebody who was a competitor who was starting to get a little bit of a toehold in the market, bring him in, bury him on the station, and fire him a year later, and then they didn't have anything going. And he did that with so many people, and I didn't fall for it. Although I interviewed with him twice.
But he paid you.
Yeah. I mean, not the way I was used to getting paid when I was at KMOX. I think it's making $110,000, which was way below what I was used to making. But that was CBS. That's the way they did things, and a lot of it was tied up in performance bonuses.
Did they fire you on the air? Is that the clip that you did? They make it
pretty much did,
because rarely is it even acknowledged. Like, all of a sudden one day I'll just be gone, and
You have to understand something. The day that I started at KMOX, I knew I was done. Because they made the announcement like in February, and then I went on the air in March. But in that period of time, KMOX got over 800 letters, complaint letters. Many of them, by the way, written by people who had names that hadn't been assigned to a human being in 100 years. A lot of Elmers, Biddy Tibbler, that sort of stuff, written on greeting cards where the writing went up the side of the card and then over on the other side. I read all 800 of them, by the way, and I got the last laugh. They're all dead. I'm still here.
What about the rapport or the lack of rapport or relationship with Ann Keefe, a celebrated personality with KMOX?
Well, she went around to everybody at the radio station at that time and told them, do not engage with Mr. Corcoran. Don't talk to him. Don't be friends with him. Don't say anything to him. If he talks to you, don't talk to him. And that's what they did. I was on the elevator coming down with Bob Hardy once, just trying to talk to him, and he just sort of stood there like I wasn't even there. So she had Ann Keefe was, Satan's personal representative on Earth, okay? And again, she's dead. F her. That was the problem. Nobody did. But I remember when Karen Foss was being interviewed by Ann Keefe on Channel 9, and I leaned over and I was like, look at that. Six divorces right there. Six divorces just between the two of them.
That is J.C. Corcoran. He's mellowed with age, clearly.
Here, you want me to play something? You guys are into golf. You play a lot of golf? Frank?
Yes.
You play a lot?
Not a lot.
Fauci does a lot.
I know him as Darren. This guy was my board op when I did a radio show on here a couple of years back. Punch up the one here that says Harold Ramis, okay?
By the way, did, in fact, bring material. Which is the comedians that used to do late-night television, the ones who were great always brought something to the table.
Sure.
Jay Leno on Letterman was always...
What's my beef?
Yeah. He'd have like an Italian beef. He had some kind of shtick. Steve Martin hitting antiques with the tennis racket.
Sure.
I love when those guys would come on because they had material, since we don't.
Okay, so here's something cool. This is the conversation with the late, great Harold Ramis. My gosh. Of course, he was the guy, he made so many great movies, including Caddyshack. We asked him about Bill Murray and the famous scene involving the grass whip. Darren, hit it.
Harold, that incredibly memorable scene in Caddyshack where Bill Murray has got that grass whip and he's just whacking the tops of the flowers off. Did you inspire him to perform that scene that way?
Yeah, I tried jogging for a while and to keep for the last quarter mile or half mile, I used to pretend I was coming into the Olympic Stadium, and I would be Bob Costas calling it, you know, hey, he's coming in, you know, he's in the lead. So I asked Bill. The scene was written. All it says in the script is that Carl's out there cutting, practicing his golf swing, cutting the tops off flowers with a grass whip, you know. And I said, well, I always, with Murray, I always figure he might as well be talking, even if there's no dialogue. He's just, you never know what he's going to say, and it's always funny. So I said, Bill, you know, do you ever, like, pretend you're the announcer when you're doing a sport, you know? Everybody must do that. And he said, oh, yeah. He said, don't say anything else. I know exactly what to do. And so he must have, God knows, if he was even doing that Cinderella story to himself, you know, before we made the movie, you know, because he went right into it. He just knew it or something. Yeah.
One of the most fun things in my job these days is to talk to directors, musicians, people like that, who are iconic figures in entertainment or sports now. You couldn't ask them the questions that you wanted to know the answers to back then, but you can now. And so they'll tell you anything. Yeah. They'll tell you anything. And that's the fun part of the whole thing. You guys mentioned the fact that I had plugged this on my Facebook pages. I got something
Spencer
else.
Spencer Koch, friend of ours, listening, I'm
Spencer.
Sure.
How you doing, Spencer? I'll give you a call later. There's two things coming up I want to draw your attention to, because it is, in one case, it's the 50th anniversary. In one case, it's 60th anniversary. Kenny Holzman, the great Kenny Holzman from University City, U City Hall of Fame, lives in Eureka right now, in the Eureka area. I just talked to him a couple years ago. It is coming up on the 50th anniversary, I think it's August 20th, of a game against the San Francisco Giants at Wrigley Field. It was a no-hitter. And the most amazing thing about the no-hitter, because I ran into him and I told him, I said, my dad and I were there. He's like, yeah. He says, let me tell you, there were 33,000 people at that ballpark that day. I've already met 100,000 who told me they were there. But I said, but no, because I remember you did not strike out a man. And he looked at me. His eyes got as big as saucers. He's like, you're not kidding. You really were there. A no-hitter without a strikeout. And it has been done before. If you look it up, it has been done before. But the story that I really want to tell you guys, and this is a short one. As you know, my uncle Don Elston was a pitcher for the Chicago Cubs. Came up with Ernie Banks in 53, played with the Brooklyn Dodgers. I got a great, I should have brought that, son of a gun, I forgot, I was going to bring it. I have a 1957 team autographed ball from the Brooklyn Dodgers. Everybody from Don Drysdale, Sandy Koufax, Joe Pignatano, Walter Alston, all these original signatures on this ball. It's my prized possession back at home. But anyhow, it was August 16th, 1959, so we're coming up on the 60th anniversary, game at Wrigley Field. Again, so my uncle comes in relief. Cubs have a one-run lead going into the ninth inning, and the leadoff man gets on first. You know what he's thinking. Got to get over to second. Got to get knocked in. We got to tie in this game. So my uncle is out there, and he throws to first. Tries the pickoff. Nothing. Throws again. Threw 11 times in a row to first base, trying to pick this guy off. And on the 12th attempt, he nails him. Game over. That base runner's name, Willie freaking Mays.
Wow. I was going to complain about pace of play. Come on, throw a pitch.
Yeah.
Picked off
12
Willie Mays.
Straight pickoff attempts and gets him on the 12th one. Gets Willie Mays to end the game.
When did you, not that you can ever let go of your Cubdom, but which, by the way, this is really weird because Bill McClellan was in the other room doing a podcast from The Current. I said, we have some of the more prominent Cub people that have been St. Louis media members. Yeah. But you're also a big Cardinal fan. The
of course.
Were great
now, like
fun.
If they play right now, who would you want to win the World Championship?
Well, let me put it to you this way. Okay, Frank, let's just say that you get a tremendous job offer from San Francisco. And they say, Frank, we have seen your stuff in St. Louis. Boom, we're going to pay $500,000. We're going to pay $1 million a year to come to San Francisco. And now you've been living there for 10 years. Going to be a Giants fan at some point? Of course. But you're still going
to
be a Cardinal fan.
So
you take the team that you grew up with. What sort of sports fan, what sort of baseball fan would you be if you abandoned the team that you grew up with just because you changed locations?
So you want the Cubs to win the division?
No, I follow,
think you were leaning that way.
No, I follow both teams religiously. And that puts me in a perfect position because I hate not having a team to follow in the playoffs.
You know,
one of them is going to get in.
Mike Bush is officially a Cardinal fan when they play the Cubs. He could get on a lie detector and say, who do you want to win? And he would say Cardinals would not go off. You're not buying that, huh?
Different strokes for different folks.
All right, let me ask you about, because we hear the clips where you hear there's George Clooney. Granted, that was from a movie, but over the years, who did you really enjoy that you maybe interviewed multiple times, or somebody you were so excited and then they were just such a turd? Such a letdown. There's probably a long list of those because a lot of these circuits too. They're like, yeah, what do you want? And I'm like, God, you signed up for this.
Yeah, there's a lot of jackass. Tommy Lee Jones. I don't even know why he bothered agreeing to do the interviews. He just sits there and antagonizes the interviewer, insults you. Just no point in it. There's just no point in it. You know, I did an interview with Jim.
He's like, I'll do the insulting here, okay?
Yeah, right. That's my job.
I'll be the jerk.
I had a conversation with Jim Palmer once. And Jim Palmer said, you know, Reggie Jackson, of all people, Reggie Jackson told him, you know, it takes just as long to be nice to somebody as it does to be creepy to him. So you might as well be nice. And it's tremendous advice. You
know, Bob Seger
was telling me a story about Kirk Gibson. And Kirk Gibson was having a lot of problems with the fans and with the media and the whole thing. And Sparky Anderson was like, you know, for God's sakes, being nice to people, it takes just as long. So apparently this thing is this attitude that is expressed by some people. It's not the first time you've heard it.
Have you ever seen the Jerry Lewis one when he's a real jerk to the one guy?
King of Comedy.
Yeah.
No, King of Comedy.
Not the movie, but an actual interview where some young guy is trying to interview him, and Jerry Lewis is the biggest jerk.
But if you want to see a great movie, see The King of Comedy. It's a very little-known Martin Scorsese movie where Jerry Lewis plays a Johnny Carson-type character. And Robert De Niro plays a character by the name of Rupert Pupkin, who has delusions of other people's grandeur. Hollywood hated the movie because it sort of exposed a really, really seamy underside of the entertainment business. It's the Martin Scorsese movie that almost nobody has seen. The King of Comedy. It is the most fantastic movie you'll ever see.
All right, so in terms of bad guys, okay, so you have one. I have John Unitas is mine.
Johnny Unitas.
The worst
one
ever.
The one that jumps out at me was A.J. Foyt, and I was part of a motorsports show, and it was a satellite interview, so we weren't next to each other.
When you think motorsports, the host of Motorsports Weekly.
Joan Rivers took my head off. Oh,
she's mean?
Man, Joan Rivers. I played that one on my show a million times. By the way, I have a show, and my boss is going to yell at me if I don't mention it. I'm on the air every morning on 93.1 FM. And if you can't pick it up for some reason, you can go to the App Store and download the app. KBDZ is the call letters. It's a free app, KBDZ, and otherwise 93.1 every morning. There you go. There's my plug.
And classic rock for years. They have been there. I would say that their playlist has been similar. Like, this is not a new format. They've been around.
No, it's classic rock. Classic rock. Hey, I tried this on my teammates. I pitched 8 innings yesterday, by the way. I can't even feel my right arm. But I will say, I was talking with Cam Jansen out there about sports injuries. Do that sometime. Open up the phone lines and just say, tell us a detailed account of the most awful sports injury you've actually personally witnessed. Your phones will light up like a Christmas tree. Wait till you hear these stories that people have. Golf courses, boats, softball fields, and get ready to cringe, too, because I'm telling you, the stuff will just make you go, oh, no, don't say anything more, when these people start getting into detailed accounts of injuries.
So you're still playing. Is this competitive?
It's a men's senior baseball league.
Yeah, let me tell you, I know an umpire, Bob Frischman, the guy I mentioned earlier, and he says JC is a workhorse. He's an innings eater who never gets tired, throws relatively hard, very effective.
Sounds like
a
deadline deal they should have made.
That's
Cardinals.
Right.
I'm going to be 66 years old in September. I'm throwing a 74-mile-an-hour fastball.
Wow.
Bob Tewksbury was throwing only a couple miles faster than that in the major leagues. So come on.
And effective.
Know? What was the pinnacle when you
let me get this in.
Oh, he's got more clips.
It's not your show. No. I tried this on the team the other night, and the key is you got to answer relatively fast. And Plavo, you can get in on this too. All right? Wind up. Here's a pitch. Swing, line drive off the pitching rubber, ricochets directly into the dugout. What's the call, Martin Kilcoyne?
Pitching rubber.
You're too late.
Base
Frank,
hit.
Frank, base hit. Plowboy.
I think it's base hit.
Base hit. Marty.
Well, now I'll say foul ball because you have stated on theirs.
It's a foul ball. It's the same thing as a bunt that is laid down that eventually just rolls foul because it did not go beyond one of the bases.
Wow.
And it hits the pitching rubber and goes foul. It's a foul ball.
I didn't know that. Boy, you came with total material. My question to you, what was the favorite moment? Was it being on Letterman? Was there a moment where you said, God, this is cool. I'm calling my mom and dad.
Mm. Favorite moment. It's actually an easy one, but nobody ever believes me. We used to do a thing called the Food and Cash Salvation Bash every Christmas. And back then, it's like you guys all have like 15 jobs, so you can't split your time. But back then, if somebody was a newspaper writer, that was their job. If somebody was on radio, that was their job. If you're on TV, that was your job. You didn't have these multiple jobs. So we conned all of these local people. We had Deanne Lane and Jerry Berger on stage together singing Silver Bells. And this was a major fundraiser at Chesterfield Mall for the Salvation Army. And over the course of the 5 years we did it, I mean, it was something like 33 tons of food and like $600,000 or something like that. And people would be coming in with trays of canned goods and stuff. It was the most, I got goosebumps thinking about this. It was the most remarkable period for me being able to do that Food and Cash Bash. That was so much fun.
All right, we have to break. One quick text about JC before we go to break. Tell JC back in the summer of 84, I had the worst freaking job I've ever had in my life, but it was JC's morning show that made it tolerable. They would play a show in the factory where I worked. Never forget that, Tim.
You want me to take you out with this Bradshaw thing? Go ahead, hit this.
Okay.
You ever had Terry Bradshaw on the show?
Yes, we have.
Okay. Did you get him to do this? Hit it.
1976, Terry Bradshaw put out an album called I'm So Lonesome I Could
Lonesome
Cry.
Lonesome I Could Cry.
Can you give me a couple of bars of the big hit?
Sure.
The last word in lonesome is me.
The last word in lonesome is me. The last word in lonesome is me. My heart is as lonely as a heart can be lonely. The last word in lonesome is me.